tonight's show is going to be really, really cool because my guest is also a WGBB person. No, don't yawn at that. And the point is, I wanted to interview this guy because he has such an interesting story to tell. See, I mean, there are a lot of DJs and hosts on this radio station. It's a station. So I heard this guy's show, and I was like, okay, he's kind of interesting. Get some interesting guests. And the guy is a former New York City police detective. And he was a chief of police for a small town and does all kinds of stuff like that. And this is sort of interesting background. He was running for a political seat that he did not win a few years back. Nah, not the kind of thing I would normally be particularly interested in. I'm a culture guy. I want to talk about theater. I want to talk about music, what's going on to an extent in the world. But really, what will get me excited is talking about bands and artists and creative types and also comedy. Those are my things. So if you say, oh, yeah, here's an ex-cop, and he has this low-key radio show, which he does on Sunday nights at 7 on WGBB, I'm like, ah. But I talked to him for a while one time when we were both at the station here, and he started telling me the story of his life and of his career, this fella named Lou Talano. And turns out, yeah, okay, he was an undercover detective for the New York Housing Police, which was... They took that away a few years ago, but it used to be this almost separate entity from the NYPD. There was the New York Police Department and then the Housing Police, and he was part of that. And he volunteered with a partner of his, John Seppi, for undercover work. And this was the late 60s, early 70s, so they really grunged down with the long hair and beards and earrings and the whole schmear to look like grungy, sort of hippie, 1970s midnight cowboy people, except they were undercover cops. And in so doing, well, they certainly had scary moments, adventures, and heavy cop stuff happen. In fact, so much of it happened, and they arrested so many criminals, that they got the nicknames Lone Ranger and Tonto. Lou Talano was Tonto because of, yeah, like braided hair stuff and a little darker complexion. He's Italian, not Indian. But the other point is, they became so fabled in New York newspaper lore for the rapport that they had and what they did and how they went about doing it, that they became the model, the idea, for television Starsky and Hutch. So when I heard that, I was like, whoa, okay, now we've got the creative angle going. Not that Starsky and Hutch was the most creative television show of all time, but this idea of, this guy I see every Sunday who's just sitting there talking to politicians and stuff, he was like the progenitor of Hutch. And then he starts talking about these things he's been doing since he retired as a police detective, and the fact that he goes to these foreign countries, new countries with new governments, and helps them train their police force. And I'm like, whoa, I gotta talk to this guy. I gotta get this guy on my show. And I did. And his name is Lou Talano, and he will be my guest on Dave's Gone By tonight at 11. It's just 40 minutes away. So do not miss that. It's a really, really, I expect a really cool conversation with him. He's a nice guy. Still muscular guy. I mean, he's in his 60s, and as my wife has pointed out more than once or twice, he looks amazing. He's got this great shock of very well-groomed white hair, built like a... he's not like a monster steroidy kind of guy, but you can tell he's just got the shape and the build, and she's like, row! And I'm like, okay. Because every guy wants his wife to look at another man and go, row! But the idea that he's in his 60s and looks like that is pretty spectacular. I mean, he won weightlifting competitions and for the police academy and all that stuff, too. So you'll be hearing all about it tonight at 11 on Dave's Gone By on WGBB AM 1240, which is where we are. That's the other stuff that I didn't even get a chance to talk about in this hour, but I wanted to bring up very quickly before I go here. A couple of sad, weird things in the news. The lead singer of Boston died this week, and believe me, I could not... Boston was never a band. It was like Foreigner. It was so foreign to my listening pattern that it was literally off the map. But nobody wants to see someone die that youngish who's in the music field. So that was sad. And then the shocker today, when I was surfing the computer when I got to the radio station, that comedian Richard Jenny has died at the age of 45. Maybe the name, you would recognize his face, but he got a couple of TV awards for stuff he did for HBO. One was called Platypus Man, if that rings a bell. And then, my favorite, something called, A Big Steaming Pile of Me. Now, that's a title I wish I could steal. I guess I can steal it now that Jenny is dead. I'm assuming they're going to be following up on this because this was a gunshot thing where it's an apparent suicide. Shot himself in the face. And so, don't know why. And it's just the weird irony of this is that just this morning on CBS This Morning, that Sunday show that they have that I've always liked, they did a piece on David Steinberg and the show that he's got on one of the small cable networks where he interviews all the comedians. Because he's done Roseanne Barr, and he's done Seinfeld and Robin Williams, and he gets those kinds of people on the show for an hour, not to do stand-up, but to talk about a life in comedy. And, of course, these are funny people, so they're funny to listen to no matter what. And I was thinking, well, gosh, this is great, and I also wish that he would have more old-timers on the show before we lose them. And it's great that he's getting Jerry Seinfeld to talk about his craft and Larry David to say what makes his comedy tick. But how about make sure that you get the Joan Rivers on and make sure you've got some of the hangers-on on. Not that we're going to lose them next week, but they're more likely to go, so to speak. And yet here it is, and you get a 45-year-old journeyman comedian like Richard Jenny, and boom. He suddenly takes his life for whatever reason. So, not a fun way to leave this little big time, but I hope you'll stick around for the next show, which is Dave's Gone By, because we're going to keep it, well, it'll be mostly light. I mean, we're going to be talking about cops and robber stuff. So strap on your belts and your Reno 911 badges, because that's me, Dave. We'll be back after one or two little messages with Dave's Gone By on AM 1240 WGBB. Do not, please, please do not change the station or go anywhere away from your radio for the next hour. I promise you, you won't regret it, so stick around. Greetings from Long Island, where every highway is a sunrise. It's time for Dave's Gone By, an hour of comedy, talk, and music brought to you by Total Theater, with your host, Dave Lefkowitz. You've never heard anything like it, so sit back, relax, squeal if you must. Here's the host of Dave's Gone By, Dave!
Tropical hot dog night! Like two flamingos in a fruit fight!
Well, there goes the neighborhood. Welcome, everybody, on this Sunday, March 11th, 2007, to the 211th episode of Dave's Gone By, right here on AM 1240 WGBB. I'm Dave Lefkowitz, the host of this radio show, and have been since October of 2002. The program is a mix of comedy, talk radio, interviews, music, madness, sketches. It's a bit different every week. That's the point. You just kind of got to hang in there and get the hang of it. And once you start listening, you get the feel for the show. And hopefully you stick around to hear more and more. Anyway, thanks to everybody who were listening in the last hour when we did the Little Big Time, which is the pre-show for Dave's Gone By. Dave's Gone By is so special that it's only an hour long, and yet it needs an hour-long pre-show before it just to improve the specialness of the Uber show, of the Dave's Gone By main show from 11 to midnight on Sunday nights. And by the way, I forgot to mention in the last hour, because I got a little caught up in talking about the Rolling Stones on TV, and then towards the end mentioning the fact that comedian Richard Jenny died just today or yesterday, shot himself in the face. Which is, I mean, that's a hell of a punchline, if you think about it. I wonder, I can't even think of the joke to go with it, but there must be one. Give it one more day, and all his friends, I mean, after they stop crying and stuff, they're going to top each other with Richard Jenny death jokes. So, it'll be a joke boom, kind of. Well, no, see, that I'm tired, and I'm straining a little there, but you know what I mean. Anyway, I forgot to mention that I haven't heard from my co-host in a few days, Jeff Goodman. He's sometimes a co-host on Dave's Gone By, but he tends to be my regular co-host on the pre-show, as well as a program called The Big Time that we do out on a Stony Brook radio station. Jeff, of course, was in Thailand for the past 5 or 6 weeks, and going out there, and he's been there a few times before, so he really goes out exploring, and this time he even took a week to go to Beijing and see the Great Wall in China. So he was supposed to be back earlier this week, and I figured to give him a couple of days to get over the jet lag stuff, because it's something like 36 hours of on and off flying to get back from where he was to where he'll be now. I'm assuming he's not still sleeping, but maybe he is. So if somebody's actually calling on the phone, I'll get that in the commercial, and maybe it's Jeff, and he'll be able to say hello. But let me get through some of the sponsorship stuff, because I've got to get to our guest tonight, our very special guest. But first, I want to say, to our sponsors, Hewlett Minuteman Press, 1315 Broadway in Hewlett, 516-569-5577. They are the Copy Kings of the South Shore on Broadway in Hewlett. 10% off for Dave's Gone By listeners at Hewlett Minuteman Press. Then Performing Arts Insider, which is the Bible of Broadway. Not Broadway in Hewlett. I'm talking Broadway in New York City. It's the place to find out everything you need to know on what's on, off, and off Broadway. Performing Arts Insider. Find out more about that at PerformingArtsInsider.com and MortgagesRock.com. They really do. Again, this is not the place to just apply for a mortgage or a loan. This is a place where you can do that, but you can also learn how to give other people mortgages and loans. You do the paperwork, and once you learn how to do it, you become a broker. Once you become a broker, you start getting the commissions. MortgagesRock.com. All the information is at that website about how to learn to be a broker, and they will help you out every step of the way. And, as I mentioned, Jeff Goodman, who I'm sorry is not here tonight or wasn't able to be here in the pre-show. Hopefully he will be with me on the Big Time, on the show that we do in Stony Brook early Friday morning. But anyway, now that Jeff's back in town, make sure you call him, because he runs an outfit called Fancy Schmancy Balloons. He does the balloons and centerpieces for your parties, for your bar mitzvahs, bat mitzvahs, christenings, funerals, if you really need balloons at a funeral, because that's a different touch, or any an office party, a going away party, your St. Patrick's Day party. If you want balloons and really cool centerpieces, Fancy Schmancy Balloons, 516-797-3229 is the number. Area code 516-797-3229. Okay, now the reason I'm rushing through this whole intro thing this week is because I got a lot of stuff to talk about with a special guest on tonight's Dave's Gone By. Now, he's been a radio host on this program on and off longer than I've been here. I mean, he was off for a couple of years, but now he's been back for a while. And he has this cool show on Sunday nights. It's on at 7, where he talks to either political people or folks who are trying to get into politics and they're running for their first offices and stuff. He also talks to former police officers. Why? Because he is one himself. Lou Tolano is a former New York City housing police detective. And what makes that even more interesting is that he's most famous for going undercover. He and his partner at the time, John Seppi, and I say this as a police partner, not in the modern sort of gay equivalent of that partner. Ordinarily, I won't make that distinction, but with, you know, a former cop who's as macho as Lou Tolano is, I kind of want to say, partner means partner. So, anyway, they were the Lone Ranger and Tonto, meaning that the New York papers, the Post and the Daily News, really took up their story because they were catching a lot of criminals while they were going undercover. In it was the late 1960s, early 1970s. So they would dress up in the hippie, grungy sort of street 1970s, you know, Haight-Ashbury meets Midnight Cowboy vibe, and go into the housing projects and try. This is when drug culture was really going crazy there. Not the crack years, but more like the heroin and cocaine French Connection kind of years. And try and do a lot of drug busts. And they were arresting a lot of folks and getting a lot done. And so they became the Lone Ranger and Tonto for the way they looked. And then this kind of heroes going into adversity and danger. And Lou was the Tonto character. He and his partner wrote a book about it called Cop Team. And that became their story. Was so, I won't say mythologized, but it became so popular that it served as the prototype for television's Starsky and Hutch. And it was, and they got to go on the set and everything like that. So that's already enough for a life. But Lou also had all these other things happen to him. He ran for political office, and he also was a police chief of a small community, and in recent years, since retiring, he's been helping other countries, rebuilding countries quite far away, put together their own police forces. That's the guy I'm talking to tonight on Dave's Gone By, Lou Talano. So we will be talking to Tonto pronto after these words. Eat. Eat. Use. Use. Buy. Buy. Look at me. I'm the American consumer, and I want to spend my money on stores, restaurants, showrooms, travel agencies, mail order catalogs. Sell me stuff. How do you reach me? Well, I listen to Dave's Gone By. So, if you advertise there, you'll certainly have my attention. Dave'sGoneBy.org has all the details, or email Dave'sGoneBy@AOL.com for the rate card. I'm listening. Sell me what you got. Welcome back to Dave's Gone By, and kind of happy and interested in having this guest with us tonight, live in the studio. He's a WGBB person, and has been, not just for the past few months, but on and off for a couple of years now. And now, don't suddenly run away or get weirded out when I tell you that he's a former cop, and a detective, in fact, and I would say fairly conservative in his views. But he's also a really good dude, and he has amazing stories to tell of his life being an undercover detective in the 1970s and 80s, as well as a political candidate, a police chief, and also a consultant to certain foreign countries and their police forces. So we're going to go through all of this stuff with, well, some people have called him Tonto, and that's not in the Spanish way of meaning stupid at all. It has to do with the Lone Ranger and Tonto, of which he was part back in the 70s as a police team. Please welcome Lou Talano. Hey, Lou.
Dave, thank you. Thanks. Thank you for having me as your guest.
Yeah, well, it's good. I mean, I've heard your show a few times on, well, several times on WGBB, because you're on Sunday nights.
Yes.
And so, you know, at first I was like, oh, okay, they've got this policeman and he's talking to political candidates. And then you start having, like, these really interesting folks on. And then you started telling me about your life as a detective. And suddenly I was like, wow, this guy's actually pretty darn interesting.
I got a habit doing that. I'm a little ham when it comes to that. You know, most people say I'm a pretty quiet guy, but when you can suck me in or get me joining when you start talking about cop stuff. I hope you didn't scare some of your audience away when you said, don't run away because we have a cop on. That, you know, that might have caused some people to run away.
Well, yeah, but there's nothing else on the radio, so they might as well come back and listen
good.
To me.
And
so.
I'm glad you cleared up Tonto, because Tonto in Spanish does mean, you know, it does mean dumb, stupid.
Well, I'm sure American Indians complained when the Lone Ranger, well, if they had any political voice at all about that designation for the Lone Ranger, then, like, they knew what it meant, just nobody else did.
You know, it's, you mentioned that, and my partner and I, because we were nicknamed the Lone Ranger, and Tonto with the book, and we were on pretty much many of the talk shows in those days, we did meet with the person that played the Lone Ranger, Clayton Moore.
Oh, cool.
We had a meeting with him in New York Biltmore Hotel. And then we also met with Jay Silverheels. They both passed away.
Well, yeah.
These are the gentlemen that actually were the movie and television people that play the Lone Ranger and Tonto.
Well, that's all right. See, that's one of the perks of having your life sort of Hollywoodized. I mean, one thing I also didn't mention is that you, as Lone Ranger and Tonto, well, your partner and you, ended up becoming the progenitors of Starsky and Hutch
right.
on TV. So let's take it back to your becoming a cop. How, when, et cetera.
You know, I was born in an area called the Lower East Side.
I've heard of it, yeah.
Downtown Manhattan, you know, and most people have a choice in life when whether you're born in Brooklyn or the Bronx, in my case, Lower East Side. You have a choice as a youngster. Do you want to be a bad guy or a good guy? You know, you can go in either direction. And, you know, I'm happy to say that I went in the right direction. And if I tell you why, I wanted to become a cop, you know, and some people say, why did you want to become a cop? And I said, well, because, believe it or not, I wanted to become a cop because of females and being conceited.
Oh, I thought that was the typical reason.
And that was, and that was probably it. And, you know, some of my friends that I was brought up with wound up doing their mafia thing. They wound up in the gangs and organized crime. Some believe it or not, and I shouldn't say that because it's not too hard not to believe, are still in jail. And to this day, life sentences. And so there's a choice. And then, of course, there are some of the guys that went through college and became attorneys and doctors. And we still have reunions from the old neighborhood, the Lower East Side.
Any famous people who've gone from, like, your neighborhood?
Yeah, if you could remember the crazy, not crazy, Eddie, Jerry, he used to sell on television, the commercial.
Oh, that's the story.
That's the story. What's the story, Jerry?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's one of the people that came from that era. And there's a few others, I just can't think of top of my head. But I can tell you, some of the people that were born down there, Eddie Cantor going way back.
Oh, well, yeah.
James Gagne, or Cagney, I should say, James Cagney. Al Jolson.
I meant in your circle, in your neighborhood.
I'm thinking of Jerry and a few other people, you know, not that became attorneys and doctors, but not, I wouldn't say, not with the exposure, I think, that I was fortunate enough to get for whatever reason.
So you became a police officer in, was it the late 50s or the 60s, or when was it?
Oh, actually in the 60s.
Okay.
I was still in school in the 50s. Now, we used to hang out on the corner of downtown New York, and there was a young cop, and you know, guys were getting in trouble, but not compared to what the young guys do today. But we had a gang, and we used to look up to people like Al Capone, you know, and some of us looked up to people like Rocky Marciano, which was nice, a fighter. So I, as a result of my father being a boxing champ in the Navy, he got me into boxing, and that's why I never smoked. And he got me into jogging and working out, and I've been doing it ever since. So I was able to build up some good values, and the guys were going out drinking and smoking and stuff like that. I can't say I didn't do it. I'd rather go to the gym. So I went into the Golden Gloves, and I became an amateur fighter.
How'd you do?
I've done that. Well, I was the PAL champ as a welterweight, and in the Parks Department, at that time, became middleweight champ. Two things ended my career. One is I started getting cauliflower ears, which, thank goodness, they went away. And when a girl brought it to my attention, what are those bumps on your ears? Right? And I said, so forget about it.
The girls again.
Absolutely. And then we had a fighter friend of ours. His name was Georgie Flores. He was, I guess, 5 years older than me. And he was an amateur fighter and then went into the pro. He had 14 wins by knockouts. And he fought a fight where he beat this guy, Roger Donahue, who was a top contender in those days. By the way, he was the lighting engineer for Yankee Stadium, this Roger Donahue.
Oh, wow.
And then I had a rematch. When was the rematch? 2 weeks later. So he fought Roger Donahue again. He beat Roger Donahue, but Roger Donahue gave him what a beating, even though he lost. Bottom line is, a month later, Georgie Flores died.
Probably an aneurysm or something.
Aneurysm,
like that.
Correct. He went into a coma the next day, and he never woke up. And then my father said, "That's it. No boxing career. No boxing career for you." Getting back to why I wanted to become a cop.
Yeah, yeah.
This young cop on the corner. His name was Angelo, and he would talk to us. And you know, in those days, the cops, you know, they spoke to you with a nightstick. But he came over and says, "Look, I want to talk to you guys. Look, I come from the South Bronx, and I used to hang out on the corner like you guys. But let me tell you, and I used, some of the guys used to laugh and do gestures and things like that. And I would listen, and then I would see him on the corner." Shoes were shined, well-groomed, and all the girls used to talk to him. He had more girls around him.
Yeah.
And I says, "Hey, this is a good job. You walk around with your pants pressed, nice and clean. You carry your gun. You're well-groomed, and all the girls are around you." Right? So I says, and that was pretty much my first thought of...
I have to say, when I was in high school, one day towards... Well, less than senior year, I think it was the Navy came to call, and they allowed them to come in for a class and talk about the options that people had of going into the armed forces. And so, you know, they gave their spiel, and a lot of the class, this being the late 1970s, was kind of, oh, yeah, like, because we had, luckily, most of us, the option of college or working for the parents, and it wasn't a financial necessity of going into the armed forces. But, of course, there were some kids who were kind of interested. But the first question wasn't about danger. It wasn't about, you know, the whether you get paid for college. It wasn't anything like that. The first question was, "So, do you have a girl in every port of call?" And they said, "Yes." I mean, they were laughing, but that was, of course, it's guys in uniform.
Absolutely. And, you know, and it's true, for whatever reason, young girls like guys in uniform. You know, and especially a sailor's uniform, you know.
But the irony is, you went in, you became a cop, I guess a street cop for a while, and then you had the exact opposite of, well, what we consider a uniform for a long time, because you went undercover, you became a detective.
Right, right. Well, I was fortunate. I hooked up with a fellow, John Seppi, who's the Lone Ranger, and we were like on the same wavelength. He was born and raised in East New York, Brooklyn, and again, I was raised downtown Manhattan. So we were not guys that were born and raised in suburbia. So we lived in tenement buildings. We hung out on the street corners. We sang a cappella. We did all those things. And so we interacted with a lot of bad guys. Guys that, I would go in the yard somewhere, and we would see the guys cleaning their guns.
Oh, nice.
And, you know, and there were times when we were invited, you know, when I say we, him in his area, me and mine, and they would say, "Well, we're going to stick up a gas station uptown. Hey, Lou, do you want to come with us?" And I, you know, and I'd say, no, I'll, or stick up a liquor store. And, you know, and then some of these guys graduated, when I say graduated, and, well, you know, wound up being in organized crime.
Right.
And some of the guys actually fell in love with that because they saw these guys with the gold watches, the big Cadillacs, again, with all the young girls. Well, they were young themselves, but with all the women, and they didn't have to scrounge quarters in their pockets to take some girl out, you know, that had the big bucks.
It's the same as drug culture. It's about the bling. It's about having the Cadillac and being the pimp in all senses of the modern senses of the word, because, you know, you need $1,000, you pull $1,000 bills out of your wallet, and there it is.
You know, it's a good analogy, and when my partner and I used to ask some of these kids, stealing pocketbooks from old ladies or stealing gold change, why don't you go out and, you know, and get a job? You know, we live in the same area you guys lived in, and, you know, some of the response was, "Well, you know, man, I get $50 a pocketbook, and sometimes $100 that's in a pocketbook, you know, even if it's $20. He said, "I got to work for $35 a week or $50 a week. I got to work
then,
at McDonald's.
So, yeah.
I'll be, yeah, whatever, $50. I got to work all week for that at McDonald's. I can make that in 10 minutes out in the street, you know." And then, like you said, Dave, and some of the guys looked up, and you You call them a pimp, and they rightfully are in their way. Selling, making big money selling drugs, have all the cash, but that's short-lived. You know, they wind up in jail or getting killed themselves, and that's the life. But some of these kids, that's who they're role models. You know.
Well, that was hip hop and rap culture. I mean, that's where the gangster culture. But again, I wanted to get back to your being going from a street cop, as it were. Right. To go to volunteering for something a bit more dangerous, but I guess more interesting.
Well, you know, I had an advantage. Before I was a cop, I was a New York City correction officer. So I worked in the jails for several years. And that's an education. And some of the places like California, I think Los Angeles, or some of them, especially in the sheriff's department, you have to work a year in a jail before they send you out in the street. And you get an education. You know, in the jails, you know, you learn how to deal with the different types not people, different types of criminals. And so when I hit the bricks, start walking a beat, I was more observant. I could spot things, not only because of the neighborhood I came from, but also from being a correction officer. So I had an advantage to some of the guys that was in my class in the police academy, who came from suburbia. Volunteering and getting involved in working undercover and playing clothes was interesting, something that we liked and we enjoyed it. We got a kick out of it. In my case, in the 60s, the Tonto came in, pretty much the nickname, because I had hair down on my shoulders.
You weren't allowed to have that until you started going undercover.
You do that undercover, correct.
Yeah.
Correct. I wore a headband. And I'm probably one of the first guys to wear an earring.
Did you actually have to have your ears pierced, or was it a clip-on?
I had a clip-on with the long hair. Yeah, I didn't want to go that far. So, and that's how it came about. And I used to, go out in the street, and it was good for two reasons. Besides enjoying it, during working undercover and going after drug dealers, which was our focus, not the drug addicts, although you get drug addicts first, and that leads you into the drug dealers, but you got guns off the street.
Mm.
And then if there were certain cases, homicide cases or major crimes, some of the people that you locked up with, you wouldn't even have to ask them. They say, look, we could tell you who killed that old lady, that lived in that building and that, You listen to them, and of course you work with the district attorney, and you give them a break. But since it wasn't our thing, me and my partner, we would give it to the detectives, the leads, and they would follow it up. So it was good, because it was a challenge, and it was rewarding.
So, you don't have satellite radio, you don't have an iPod, or 100 music channels on your cable. Doesn't matter. Live365.com has dozens of radio stations in all sorts of formats absolutely free. And one station, DFSX Radio, plays vintage episodes of Dave's Gone By every Saturday night at 11 Eastern Time. I've even put their link on davesgoneby.org. So, just click to hear music and talk and me free on DFSX.
Hi, this is Lou Tolano, and you're listening to Dave's Gone By on WGBB.
What were some of the more dangerous, or I hate to use the word exciting, because that's kind of a wrongish word to use, but some of the heavier situations that you and your partner found yourselves in?
There were several of them, but one that pretty much stands out in my partner and both our minds is that we rented this apartment, Pink Houses, in East New York, Brooklyn, and we got into the apartment, and there was three guys in the apartment, and you would knock on the door, and you slip in a couple of bucks, $5 ever was, through the peephole, and they'd slip you a deck of heroin. So we did this for, I guess, 2, 3, 4 weeks, and then it was time to get the warrant, and four of us were going to hit the apartment, which we did. And when we rushed into the apartment, there was three guys in the apartment, and the two guys on the left of us, there was four of us, were holding two kids in their hands.
Oh, boy.
And they had their guns out. And the guy I chased ran into the bedroom. He pulls a baby out of the crib. And in the crib, he had an automatic weapon.
Okay.
So, you know, they say, you know, what's going on now? People say, well, why do cops react? Why do they shoot so much? How we held back without shooting this day is because of the children. Now, they were shooting at us.
Oh,
shooting at us.
And you had to shoot back then. You can't not shoot.
What if I tell you we didn't fire a shot? It's so hard to believe. We didn't fire a shot, Dave. And one of us got shot. When I say one of us, one of the guys did get shot.
Bad.
Actually, I should say, one guy was shot. No, it was shot in the thigh. Thank God it didn't hit the main artery that goes down your thigh. And one was hit pretty bad, believe it or not, with ricochet.
Huh.
Ricochet tore his stomach up. We didn't wear vests in those days.
Oh, right.
You know, before it was mandatory to wear vests. So, we locked up these guys. And let me say
Go ahead. How did you...
we jumped them. We actually jumped them because they had the babies. The babies are screaming. They couldn't shoot accurately, you know. Some of the guys were throwing things at them, you know. But nobody fired a shot from our side, you know. And the guy who grabbed the gun, he didn't get a chance to use his gun. Okay. He just had it in his hand, and I tackled him and the baby. So I fell on top of the baby, and he's on his back. And by that time, I had my gun in his ear.
Good, yeah.
So by that time, and I had, it was you know, to hold a baby and keep my gun in his ear and make sure he doesn't grab the gun is...
You probably should have just pointed the gun at the baby.
So a lot of people were saying, you know, they couldn't understand how come we didn't shoot any of them, you know. And the bottom line is that all three of them did wind up in Brookdale Hospital, which was the closest hospital. And some were there for quite a while.
So in other words, once you got them down on the ground, we did what we had to do.
And
but see, in these days, you couldn't have gotten probably away with that second part of the story. They would say, well, you got them down on the ground. You know, you got to stop there.
You know, they could say that, you know, and it doesn't work like that. You know, it's through the years, I've noticed that, you know, with all these different cases, Abner Louima, Amadou Diallo, and say, why did these cops fire 50 times? Well, one of the shootouts that was to answer your question. That was one of the most traumatic incidents that we had. There was a time when we, I remember the year because they were laying off cops. It was 1975, and they laid off a bunch of police officers. And even though we were detectives, we had a ride in a marked police car, even though we were in suits and ties. Hmm. And that was as a deterrent to show there's still police coverage out there.
Cool.
It was. Could have been cosmetics, but it's politics.
It doesn't
it's
hurt.
Politics
also.
As usual.
Yeah.
And you're right, David, it doesn't hurt. So we're out there patrolling in a marked car, and while we're in there, we see a guy running across the street holding his head. He's bleeding. And then in front of him was a guy carrying, you could see it's a night deposit bag. And we saw a gun in his hand. We jump out, we have a shootout with him, and it's one of the things that you were just reading. It says Wild West story in Brooklyn. That's so we had a shootout with this guy, and he ran into a building. By that time, we had got on the radio. There was backup. John, my partner, John Seppi, emptied his gun. I emptied my gun.
Wow.
And we didn't carry automatics on them, but we did carry our two revolvers. So we had an off-duty revolver and a regulation revolver. So we carried both guns.
Right.
So and the guns only held, I should say, the regulation 6 rounds, the off-duty 5 rounds. Today they have double that in one automatic weapon. So when we got him into the precinct, he was in the precinct downtown where we had the incident with him. He's in the cell, and he says, hey, man, I don't feel good. what's the matter? He says, well, you know, and he pulls up his shirt.
Yeah.
He shot 6 times.
Oh, he was? Oh,
he
yeah.
was, and we, you know, of course, we tackled him, we fought with him, so he had blood on him, but we didn't know most of the blood was coming from the wounds.
Okay.
So, John, but to this day, John doesn't know if his bullets hit him. I don't know if mine do, but we argue back and forth. You know, now it was mine, because you know, we're still kidding around about that. So,
did you let him suffer for a while, or did you?
Well, we called the ambulance and we took him. And he survived all six rounds of ammunition. So,
man.
The district attorney, we're in court, and you know, of course, all the paperwork indicates that he was shot 6 times, and we were not shot, thank God. But
I see. And they started to ask, well, wait a minute, if you weren't shot,
yeah. Same even in those days. And the district attorney said to me, I was so pissed off with his question. He says, well, you know. How come you shot him 6 times? And I says, well, Mr. DA, that's all my gun would hold.
So. That's probably not the answer that you would hear on Law and Order. Yeah.
Even the complainant who owned the parking garage, he was probably followed from the bank into the parking garage, and that's where the stick-up went down. That's where the guy decided to stick him up off the street in the office. He was by himself in the parking garage on DeKalb Avenue, Brooklyn, downtown Brooklyn. But he was yelling and screaming. He kept saying the complaint to the DA, if it wasn't for the assistant DA, if it wasn't for these guys, I wouldn't be here. They saved my life. And I know the district attorney at that time, I think, was Eugene Gold. I'll go right to him. If you indicate that you think these guys did anything wrong, I'll go to, I don't know if it was Mayor Koch or one of the mayors, and maybe Beam, and he said, my family knows the mayor, and then the ADA says, no, I just have to ask these questions. You know? So.
Well, he does. I mean, that's his job. It's your job. It's the game. It's the dance you do, as a matter of course, of what you guys do. By the way, we're talking with Lou Talano. And he hosts a show called Streetwise on the Dave's Gone By station, WGBB. We'll have more with Lou coming up. If you love Broadway, off-Broadway, cabaret, opera, and dance, isn't it time you subscribe to Performing Arts Insider, the ultimate guide to everything on the stages of New York? Listings, reviews, box office, and production news, all at 10% off for Dave's Gone By listeners. To subscribe or get a sample issue, call 516-295-1511, 295-1511, or see PerformingArtsInsider.com.
Hi, this is Lou Talano, and you're listening to Dave's Gone By on WGBB, 1240 AM. Dave Lefkowitz. And I speak Yiddish, and I had a... it's a shame, Dave Lefkowitz.
Speak Yiddish?
Yeah.
How do you speak Yiddish?
Well, I speak Yiddish because I was born in New York's Lower East Side, mixed area, and I did work a while for Rabbi Jacob Joseph School for Orphan and Refugee Jewish Children.
You're kidding me.
Yes, and was on East Broadway and Clinton Street, the whole Lower East Side. And, you know, we talked about it before. I lived in the neighborhood on the Lower East Side, and we have reunions in Florida with guys that and gals from the neighborhood. And we talk about some of the things that were, interesting, colorful area, is that if you walk into your building, which was not a project, we couldn't afford to live in a project. We lived in a tenement building. And in the tenement building, when you'd walk in there, you would smell the sauce from all the different pasta, right?
Right.
And then you would hear, you'll hear chopping. And that's the people making gefilte fish. They would make, so in that building, and then you smell Greek food.
Oh,
and
man.
Of course, in those days, you kept the doors open, windows open. So walking into the building, you got hungry, you know. So, and intermingling, interacting with different nationalities, religions. So you pick up things. And since I was working at 14 years old for the school, I started as a messenger, and then I started answering phones, and then I started picking up Yiddish.
Wow.
So, which was helpful in, you know, as on a job as a police officer. So
was it really? How many Yiddish people did you have to arrest?
No, it's not even that. You know, it's the victims. Keep in mind, my partner and I were assigned to Coney Island at one time, and we also signed my old neighbor, the Lower East Side, when they formed this Crimes Against the Elderly squad. That's what we were in when they first created it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like anything else. If you interview the person and you say, like, for example, this particular complainant, many of them are old, Alta Yiddish.
Cockers. Alta Cockers.
I don't want to say Cockers, but Alta Cockers, okay. Alta Maidlers, whatever, you know. And I would say, Mamala Zugme, wie gehst du Trumpenik? And she'd say, oh, du bist der Yid? And I say, wo denn? You know, and they would open up. They feel comfortable, you know.
And not having a clue that you were Italian.
Yes.
I mean, you know, dyed in the wool at Milano, Italiano, yeah.
Interesting that you mention that, because in the same neighborhood on the Lower East Side, my name being Tolano, like you said,
mm-hmm.
and my first name being Louis, which I don't know anybody calls me Louis, thank God. You know, either Louis from the old neighborhood or Lou when I was police officer, detective, and chief of police, what they'd call me chief, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But the guys, the Jewish guys I hung out with, they would call me, and you'll get a kick out of this, Label Talena.
Label Talena. Well, Talena is Tolano, right? Well, label for Lewis.
And Talena means Italian in Yiddish.
Oh, I might. Well, there you go. I didn't know that. I don't speak Yiddish. I used to speak a little Hebrew, but not so.
And they would say, like Louis the Italian, Label Talena.
Yeah.
You know, Label Talena.
Very sweet.
So, it's, you know, but some of the Jewish people I interviewed, they would say, you know what your name means in Yiddish? I said, yes, I do. You know, it means I'm a guy.
Well.
But I'm a good guy. There's bad guys and good guys, you know?
Well,
so
that's good and guys. Well,
I know. I just use that. Well,
and there are Italian Jews, too. I mean, there
yeah.
is such a thing.
As black Jews, too?
A few.
Yes. There are, you know, and there's all types, of, you know.
And there's orange Jews and tomato Jews. And, yeah.
Well, I'm reminded by my Jewish friends, you know, Jesus was a Jew, you know?
Yeah.
And I know what I say?
Life, yeah.
And I say, Vuten.
You know? That's right. Where else could you have been at that point?
Know.
It wasn't the Mooney. Yeah.
Right. So
I didn't get on this. Okay.
Yeah, I know. we did, but
you saw my face. You said Jew, and you talked.
But you started off wanting to interview me about different things, and somehow we drifted into this, which is okay.
No, that's cool.
You know, I'm going to be on your show. Doing something similar that we're doing now.
Right, in a couple of weeks, yeah.
Yes, and some of the things that I know, I peeked over your shoulder, I saw some of the questions that you want to ask me. So,
you are a detective still, okay.
I know some of the things that... so I'm going to just give the audience a preview what's going to happen on your show, is that some of the serious things have occurred, you know, with my partner and myself, and some of the funny things. And since we're talking about how I can speak a little Yiddish, tell you a story. If you recall, there was undercover anti-crime cops that dressed as Hasidims or dressed like the rabbis. Yeah, we were one of the first, my partner and I. So,
and you had an in, because even though you didn't speak Spanish, which is you spoke a little Yiddish.
I speak a little Spanish to get by, but I also speak a little Italian to get by, but not enough that they want to get into a whole big Megillah, so to speak, you know? So, but it's enough to say, where do you live, how old are you, what do you do for a living, you know, things like that, the basic stuff.
That's where I remember that from NYPD Blue. They had one of those episodes, they're on detail. It was Sipowicz and whoever, or may have even been, the one before, what was the, Hill Street Blues, probably.
Oh, Hill Street
Blues. Renko and whatever.
Oh, yes.
As Chassids.
Right. See, you're older than you look.
Thank you.
You know.
And you look, I mean, you know, you were, I mean, yes, your hair is white, but it's good hair.
Okay.
And because you do the build and the thing, I mean, you showed me a picture of you pressing weights for...
That was in the book, the Police Olympics.
Right.
Yeah.
I didn't know there was a Police Olympics.
Yeah, and in fact, it's national. The ones that, if there's any event you could think of, boxing, judo, karate, volleyball, baseball. I was in what they call powerlifting, which is weightlifting. And that was my hobby for 100 years. And
so how much could you, what did you do? What was your...
Well, I want to say this. Should I say the year?
My go ahead.
1976 and 1977, I won the silver medal in New York. When I say New York, keep in mind, every police department in the state of New York competes in this.
Oh, wow.
In different weight categories. So 76 and 77, I won the silver. Before that, I won about four or five bronze medals. And I couldn't understand why some of these guys kept winning the gold medal. And I said, I know I'm strong as them, or as strong as them, or stronger than them, but I couldn't win the gold medal. Years later, I found out even cops were doing steroids. They were doing the anabolic steroids.
Well, even I guess it wasn't things. Illegal, come to think of it.
No, it really wasn't. You know, and but I was so... I had a different... different ideas about working out, you know, no smoking, no drinking, of course, which they didn't do either, you know, high protein, all that stuff. And when I had a headache, I wouldn't want to even take aspirins. So to put a needle in my butt was no way in the world I was going to do that. But I found out later, years later, these guys were doing anabolic steroids. But I also competed nationally, because if you win the top three medals in New York State in every weight category, in every event, you compete against the West Coast cops.
Cool.
Which is, when they say West Coast, they throw in Florida, Arizona,
not very
California,
west,
I know, but they throw
Key
in the
West, maybe.
The warm climate, so to speak, as opposed to the East
Actually,
Coast.
You know, that brought up something totally out there, and maybe you don't necessarily want to talk about it, but it does get kind of interesting, the mention of the steroids being... I mean, it's not even illegal to use except in sports, because it's illegal for sports, not, I guess, against the law per se. But did you ever run into a Serpico sort of situation of seeing your fellow officers, your fellow people, doing something significant? I'm not talking about little stuff, but significantly wrong.
Well, you know, I have to be careful what I say.
Sure.
Even though the statute of limitations is long gone in my case. Mm-hmm. So, you know, right. But, to answer your question, yeah, there were some guys doing some things, you know, and...
Don't have to mention names, but
I was... The Knapp Commission was in those years, and they were prosecuting, indicting, and, you know, of course, before arresting police officers. So I knew some of those guys that were arrested. Yes, and, you know, you mentioned Serpico, but... The person that allegedly shot Serpico is really not the person that shot him. How I know is that his name was Mambo, and this guy was a meek drug dealer. He was so afraid, he wouldn't even carry a gun. This guy did not shoot Serpico, the one who was arrested for it. If you grabbed him in the street, and that's how I first met him, I was able to cop dope from him, dressed as Tonto. I was able to purchase narcotics from him. You know, so
you're talking about the meek little Nebbish who got pinned for the
exactly,
rat. Yeah.
Right. The Kleiner Nebbish, like you said. He'd give up his grandmother. But somehow, he's the guy that's accused, when they made this raid, of shooting Frank Serpico. And I know he didn't shoot him. You know.
So what are you implying?
I'm implying that, obviously it smells. Now, maybe another cop shot him. Maybe somebody else shot him. I don't know. Maybe Serpico set it up himself. He was always suspect, this guy. You know. My question to Serpico is that if you know a certain particular unit is dirty, which you know, corrupt.
Yeah, yeah.
Getting corrupt. Why would you want to go in it? Why would you want to be part of it? And he did. He wanted to force himself into this particular unit. Now, in those days... I'm going to tell you what the general thought was. Hear no evil, see no evil, and do no evil. Mm-hmm. As a cop, you know? You don't have to get involved in it, which we didn't, right? But you don't have to give up the person, which they want you to. And I'm going to tell you, I don't want to tell you about what my partner and I did, but if they do it, you're not going to talk them out of it if these guys are willing and dealing. You know, when I say these guys, the cops,
yeah.
You're not going to convince him. You're not going to sit down like a priest or rabbi and say, you know, this is a sin, this is bad. You know, you stay away from them, and you pretty much ignore it. But Ignoring it is good because you don't know the details of what they're doing, but you know they're doing something, and you know they're doing it. So the question to Frank Serpico is, why would you want to get involved? Why would you want to do this? You could have been a detective like the way my partner was. Go out and arrest bad guys. Yeah, you can let somebody else arrest bad cops. Yeah, you're supposed to give them up. But he put himself in a position where it appeared like he wanted to do it. And how did he get his gold shield? And that's the expression. You become a detective from being a police officer. He got it when he was shot. He was promoted while he was laying in the hospital bed.
You're talking about
Frank Serpico.
Yeah, right.
He was given his gold shield while he was shot. Not to anything that he did. He didn't do a damn thing, this guy. He just had a long hair and a beard. That's the extent of it. You know?
It's like a Purple Heart. I mean, if he got shot in the line of duty...
Absolutely, but you don't get promoted to detective. You know, what did he do? Who did he apprehend? What was the case? Nobody else got promoted.
Well, maybe the department wanted to promote him as having him like the police more and go after criminals instead of criminals in the police department.
Well, he never did that because he retired. That was payback. It's like, you know, forgiving of cops.
Well, yes, it was. Obviously, it was.
That's what it was. So,
to admit, it may have been not a nice thing to do since these were your brothers, but it was a brave thing to do. Probably braver than going out on the street at some point and knocking around a drug dealer.
In those days, it could be.
Probably in these days, too.
But pretty much, but, you know, it's the way of life in the police department. You know, it's just, you just don't do certain things. You don't have to be involved with that. And, you know, and the cops that were arrested and indicted, by the way, Najari pretty much indicted many cops, but he only got, I think, 10% convictions. Hmm. Najari was there running the NAP commission at the time, the prosecutor. He only got like 10% conviction rate in that. So,
I'm not just wanting to pull this into like the 1970s and
right.
I mean, you've got those two guys. Now, during time, those two cops who shot those people, they were working, I think, for the mob in a way. I'm sorry, I'm blanking on the details.
No.
This is recent. This is within the past
year
they were convicted. Yes, these guys were
bad guys.
Assumedly evil.
Evil guys, and they should do at least life.
Was the one to go out there and get them?
You know, that's more recent than my time, and I happen to know these guys. And
personally?
Sure. I work with one of them. I worked with his brother, who's a detective, who actually retired as a police inspector. I don't want to go into names, but
people can look up the names of these two people, cops. Yeah.
His brother retired as a deputy police inspector, who I worked with when I was a detective. So, they were definitely, and I still talk to a lot of, you know, police officers, and we all agree that these guys are bad news. And again, if they gave them the death penalty, if they can prove that they committed homicides, which I believe they did, you know, and it wouldn't bother me if they received the death penalty. But again, they're sort of isolated cases.
Well, yeah, I mean, nobody's saying that it's 30% of the police force,
right.
or even 10.
Right.
It's just if it doesn't get rooted out from within, then who's to necessarily root out until God knows how much longer it goes on. That's all. Yeah.
Absolutely. But, you know, anyway, what else, Dad? You're interviewing me.
Okay, move on to some happier stuff. What are the gifts that keep on giving? Education, culture, herpes. What about a Dave's Gone By CD? For just $11, you can surprise and delight that special someone with a digitally recorded hour of comedy, music, and magic. Nearly every episode we've ever done is on sale, so visit davesgoneby.org to choose the show you want. Save money with multiple orders. Add $1 for a personal autograph. Dave's Gone By on CD, my gift to the world.
Hi, this is Lou Talano, and you're listening to Dave's Gone By on WGBB 1240 AM.
By the way, you ran for political office at one point. You were running for, was it Congress?
I ran for Congress, right.
I mean, you didn't win, but how did it go? Yeah.
I went pretty good.
Yeah.
I won the primary, which is good. And, you know, I was involved with Rudy Giuliani. I was his law enforcement liaison, and I put together his first security advance. And then some of the politicians said, you know, Louis, make a good politician, or make a good congressman. You know, why don't you run for Congress? And I did. I ran Brooklyn, Queens as a congressman. I'm a registered Democrat.
What? And, really?
Yes.
That's a shock.
But I'm conservative. I'm very conservative.
Okay.
You know, in fact, my viewpoints for years are pretty close to being a Republican. Because
okay.
I believe in the death penalty, things like that.
All right.
You know, and I definitely don't agree with liberalism. When I say liberalism, I think I'm a liberal. Because I think people that harm children and rape and murder senior citizens should get the death penalty, you know. So that's being liberal. I'm compassionate to these people. So these victims, I should say. So,
I'm not sure I disagree with you on the death penalty, but it's certainly a conservative view to agree with the death penalty.
Yes, that's what I meant. So yeah. I'm more of a conservative, even though I'm a registered Democrat. But I jumped into a primary, a Democratic primary, and four or five guys who were already councilmen, councilwomen, and assemblymen were running for Chuck Schumer's vacant seat. It was up for grabs.
Wow.
So I jumped in.
This is how long ago?
I guess 10 years ago now.
Okay.
You know, or 9 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, and I jumped in into the primary, and that all of them got together, which they all hate each other, and challenged my petitions to get me off the ballot. And it was successful, because I couldn't afford to respond to each individual particular
action. How many signatures did you need, or something like that?
I think 1,500 or, no, I needed more than that.
Hmm.
2,500. And I had them, but they challenged them. So I dropped out. When I dropped out, the Republican Party called me.
Huh.
Because I'm going to tell you this. With my last name, I got the endorsement from the Jewish Post and the Jewish Press.
Because it was Italian and Jewish.
You know, and besides,
full circle.
Besides
yeah.
all the other union endorsements, civil service endorsements, and I was doing good fundraising. And they asked me to run as their Republican candidate against Anthony Weiner, who won the Democratic primary. And P.S., you know what happened with that. Because
well.
I ran in the Democratic area. But they tell me I got more votes than Mayor LaGuardia did as
well.
A Republican candidate. But I did very well running.
Did you like politics, or is it just like, ugh?
Actually, both. How do you say both? You like it, and it is, ugh.
Right.
You know?
Well, what was the ughi part? I mean, did you already, even though you didn't win, I mean, did you find yourself making compromises that you didn't,
you know,
or shaking hands of people that you had to wash afterwards?
You know, everyone has a dream, you know, and I had a dream that I would be, and I still do, it's more of a reality, that I would be on like the old Untouchable movie, or that they had the Untouchables on television. I think I would be hated by everyone, because I think I would be an untouchable congressman.
Huh.
You know, and that was my
yeah.
belief. You
uh-huh.
know, you couldn't schmear me, you know, all right? You know, and you're not going to corrupt me. So I'm going to do what I think is best for everyone. You know, it's... I mean,
that was actually the idea probably of Bloomberg coming in. He had so much money that the idea was that he could do and be his own man just because no one could pay him off, or he had all the money. And money wasn't a factor in his running. So at least that was the idealized version of what Bloomberg was supposed to be coming in as mayor.
Absolutely right. And Ed Koch was like that.
Hmm.
Ed Koch was very wealthy in his own right.
Right.
And you couldn't touch him with money. You know, and when I say touch him, you know, they do it different ways. It's campaign donations, contributions, whatever you want to call it. There's other ways that what they do in politics in this country. So, but the mistake he made was he had trust in his commissioners.
Mm-hmm.
And they were corrupt. I shouldn't generalize, but many of them were corrupt.
Okay.
And that was sort of pretty much a downfall in his
case. And he couldn't fight crime. I mean, New York went downhill and financially. And
actually,
it
went downhill with David Dinkins as far as
much worse. I mean, it started as like a little gravel slide, and then it just became literally like a...
He was the worst mayor in New York City has ever had.
Oh,
that's ways about it. The worst. You know, and the dumbest. You know,
wow.
And that's a fact.
You have a picture with him, you know.
He was smart. He came to, I had a dinner, and I said something about him in the newspapers when I was campaigning for Giuliani. I was interviewed on the steps of City Hall, and I made a statement that if David Dinkins becomes mayor of the city of New York, the city will see the worst crime wave in New York City history. And, and it happened.
Well, yeah.
So he's being a good politician. I say he's dumb. Being a good politician, he did like most politicians did. Don't talk, don't talk your enemies. Try to make friends with them. So I had a major fraternal order of police event in New York. And he stopped by. He stopped by, and he's the mayor of the city of New York.
Absolutely.
So, of course.
Politics makes
sense. And he's the mayor of the city of New York. So, of course, I had to acknowledge him, introduce him, acknowledge him, and whatever, and took pictures together, you know. So, I don't know. I think if someone said that about me, I'd hate them forever. But, you know.
If you like the laughs I bring you every week on Dave's Gone By, I'll bet you'll like my book a whole lot, too. It's called Marriage, Babies, and the End of the World, full of short and funny plays about everything from blind dates to dead people to a bowl of prunes. Marriage, Babies, and the End of the World, available from Holvo Books on my website, davesgoneby.org. Makes a great gift, and the laughs are on me. You know, we have just a couple more minutes with your show with Lou Talano here, and I did want to ask. You had mentioned this to me at one point, and I was just like, "Whoa!" Because I know you're a retired detective and all the jobs you used to do when you were chief of police of Seagate, but then you had mentioned something about going to like foreign governments or with the military or something like that.
Well, actually, I was an advisor. You know, I just can't go into details with Afghanistan and Iraq. Is this private security company hired me to help recruit and interview the potential police officers for Iraq and Afghanistan.
Good. So, now, did you do that here, or did you go to Iraq and Afghanistan?
I think I can't talk about that for 2 years, and it's only like a year ago, so I have another year to pretty much talk about it. I could say as much as that I did what I did, and I can't say where it was. But there was a screening process that I was involved in recruiting. I didn't like it, by the way. So it was a year commitment. I didn't do a year.
So, okay. I mean, what didn't you like? Or can you not say what you didn't like about it?
Well, you talk about Serpico and not trusting police officers.
Yeah.
I didn't trust the people I was interviewing. You know, I had the feeling that a lot of them, some of them doing for the money. I didn't get good vibes. I didn't get good feelings with them. And I could see where some of these guys could be infiltrators, not to be corny and possible terrorists, you know. And, of course, that was my opinion. That was the conclusion of my interview, is that you got to keep an eye on them, and I don't trust them, you know. And the ones I interviewed, and I was interviewing pretty much the ones that was, since I was a chief for the New York City Sheriff's Department, and a chief, like you mentioned, Seagate. And I did investigations on police officers as a detective, applicant investigations, things like that. But anyway, I would interview potential supervisors in those police departments, and I didn't get good vibes. And
But let's say you had a good candidate. What would be the difference between being a police officer or chief here, and what would you look for someone who is going to be out in a freaking war zone?
You can't. You know, you're dealing with different mentality.
Right.
You're dealing, we come from America. We have different values. Many of them, I didn't feel they had any values. Ooh. You know, they have no problem. They wouldn't have any. The feeling they got is that they're just as bad as a terrorist. I felt they'd have no problem cutting your throat. You know.
Right.
They'd have no problem torturing you, and they'd have no problem strapping dynamite on themselves and killing themselves. So how do you deal with people like that?
You make them New York City school teachers. No, I'm kidding. I'm just kidding.
Bring him into the New York City Police Department now.
No, I mean, you can make that joke. If I make that joke, you break my arm. But Lou Talano, I guess we should wrap up. But it's been fabulous talking to you.
Well, we talked about some of the things, Dave. Thank you. It was a great idea that you had, you know.
Thank
you. Something different.
Yeah.
You know,
Hewlett Minuteman Press is the place to get your copies done. Posters, letterheads, flyers, binders, everything under the sun. The wonderful Torong family has owned and operated Hewlett Minuteman Press for 30 years. 3 decades of quality work and attention to your needs. Dave's Gone By listeners get 10% off at Hewlett Minuteman, 1315 Broadway. Hewlett Minuteman Press is the place to get your copies done. 569-5577, now call them, everyone! Call them everyone, ladies and gentlemen, but definitely call Hewlett Minuteman Press on Broadway in Hewlett. 10% off on all jobs for Dave's Gone By listeners. Also, 10% off for people who subscribe to Performing Arts Insider Theater Magazine. PerformingArtsInsider.com is the place to find out all about it. And don't forget, everybody, MortgagesRock.com. It's the place for you to find out how to get, not only to get mortgages for yourself, but to get mortgages for your friends, your family, your coworkers. Bring those people in. You do the paperwork, and the more paperwork you learn, the more commission you earn. MortgagesRock.com. And finally, on the sponsor end, going to give a shout-out to my good friend Jeff Goodman, who is hopefully back from Thailand and will be back in town this week. So he'll join me on our other show that's on Stony Brook's WUSB on Friday mornings. I'll tell you about that in a minute. But anyway, Jeff's sideline job is the head of Fancy Schmancy Balloons. Balloons and centerpieces for all your parties and events. 516-797-3229 is the number. So, thank you so much for joining me on the big show tonight. Thanks, of course, to Lou Tolano. You can hear him, by the way, every Sunday at 7 on this radio station. Which, by the way, let's do a legal ID. WGBB Freeport, AM 1240 on your dial, and live streaming on the web at AM1240WGBB.com. And in honor of Lou Tolano, we'll be playing a special Randy Newman song at the very end of this program, just a minute or two from now. A couple of reminders, though, that you can listen to Vintage Dave's Gone By episodes on Thursdays and Saturday nights at 11 on Live365.com. That's a web portal of all these different web radio stations. The DFSX Radio Comedy Channel on Live365 is the one that plays Dave's Gone By episodes Thursdays and Saturday nights at 11. They play 2 different ones each week. And also, a very cool thing, for a long time, theaterpod.com had a podcast of our 100th show. Well, they went ahead and they put up 25 different shows on theaterpod.com now. You can listen to them for free at any time of the day or night. They're up there permanently, or at least for the duration. So if you really want to listen back to a bunch of Dave's Gone By episodes and think about maybe buying some on CD, because they're only $11 a piece, well, here's a place you can go and listen right on the web at any time and really get a sense of the show. This particular episode was pretty much all interview with Lou Tolano, but other episodes are either mostly music or there's comedy involved. You got to listen to a bunch to really get a sense of it. And, again, reminder, this Friday, March 16th, from 3 in the morning until 6:30 in the morning, on 90.1 WUSB-FM out in Stony Brook, it's going to be me and hopefully Jeff Goodman doing the big time, 3.5 hours of talk and humor and weird fun stuff. Coming up on Dave's Gone By in the weeks ahead, next week, to coincide with a big crossword tournament that happens, I think it's in Pittsburgh or it might be in Jersey somewhere, but either way, we're getting Stanley Newman, who is the crossword puzzle editor of Newsday, to join us, and he'll be talking about crosswords, how to do them quicker and better, and also how he got a fairly rare job being the crossword puzzle editor of a major metropolitan newspaper. And then, looks like March 25th, we're going to have the cabaret songstress Maud Maggart. What a special voice she has. She came out of nowhere just about 5 or 6 years ago and went from playing little clubs of, like, who is she, to becoming one of the most sought-after cabaret singers around now, and not because, and it has nothing to do with the fact that she's Fiona Apple's sister. But anyway, we'll be talking about all of that with Maud Maggart. Looks like we'll have her on March 25th, and then on April 1st, April Fool's Day, but I am not fooling, a legend, an absolute television and radio legend, Joe Franklin, joins us on the Big Dave's Gone By program of the air. Ladies and gentlemen, do not miss that. Anyway, that's all in the future. Next week it's Stanley Newman and the Crosswords, so we will be back next Sunday, May. The warm weather's getting to me. No, not May yet. It's March 18th coming up next week, 2 days before spring, and a day after St. Patrick's Day, with the 212th episode of Dave's Gone By. So until then, don't miss your days going by. This is Dave Lefkowitz wishing you good night. Happy St. Patrick's Day. And remember, don't drink and drive. Drink, then drive. Because you can't hold the beer and steer the wheel at the same time. And gone by.
How the sun shines down, how their feet hardly touch the ground. Darling, come on parade. Come to black and white. From the motorcycle, it's so damn strong. And we drink it for the children. Oh, they look so nice. Looks like angels have come down from paradise. Got it, coffee.